If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
Focusing on building a relationship over a year and a half, with no expectations of doing a deal, I think was the only reason that he ended up working with me.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Axel is an active real estate investor based in Boston, Massachusetts. He purchased his first multifamily property during his sophomore year at the University of New Hampshire, where he earned degrees in finance and entrepreneurial studies. While at UNH, he was a founding member and co-managing director of the Rhines Angel Fund, the first and only undergraduate student-managed angel investment fund in the country. He is continually searching for new multifamily properties and communities to invest in. Currently, Brickleaf Properties owns approximately $5.2 million in multifamily real estate, and Axel has been a principal party in about $15 million worth of transactions. Axel, welcome to the show.
Awesome. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Oh, man, this is great. This is great. I'm excited to jump into your story. You know, the same questions we ask everybody when they come on is, where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Absolutely. So I'll try and keep it brief, but I started about 5 years ago buying small multifamily properties in a market that was very local to where I grew up. So it's a city called Manchester, New Hampshire. I was living near that the city when I started. And this is, you know, 5 years ago. I was actually in college at the time, and did a few deals while I was in school and still, you know, living on campus, which was about a half hour, 40 minutes away from where I was buying. Then I ended up moving down to Boston, Massachusetts. And this is about 2.5 years ago now. So it's about an hour 15 away. So it's, you know, some people would call that local. I think I'd call that still a local market, a drivable market from where I am. And, you know, worked full time the first few years I was in the business, you know, mainly as a real estate agent, but, you know, making money in other ways too. And, you know, was flipping some properties and generating income that way. But to keep a long story short, pretty much what I've done is over the last 5 years, just, you know, using the Burr model that everyone kind of knows online, you know, buying discounted deals with private money, adding value to them, and then refinancing out and growing a portfolio of about 70 units. That's what we have today. And mainly just me, you know, I don't have too many partners on those deals. It's, you know, just me and the deed. And I guess where I'm at now is taking this nest egg that I've built that's kind of replaced my income and allowed me to take a step back and think about how I want to scale the business and actually executing on that plan, which is raising some money from equity investors, you know, doing more deals and doing larger deals, both locally and starting to look out of state now as well. So that's pretty much been my real estate career, I guess, in a nutshell. Happy to dive into any parts of that for if we want more info.
Yeah, I would be curious. Let's rewind the tape a bit and go back to when you were in school. How did you decide to start buying small multifamily while you were still in college?
The reason I wanted to get into real estate was, you know, I've always bought and sold stuff online. You know, I used to, you know, electronics, cars, whatever, you know, and it started to grow in size to the point where I was, you know, 19, 20 years old. And I was trying to think about, all right, well, what, you know, if I'm going to keep doing this, because I really enjoyed, you know, the hunt of finding a deal and earning a spread, right? You know, what can I do that's larger? And basically stumbled upon flipping houses. And that was how I got into real estate in terms of learning about real estate. So all the Google searches I was doing to learn about, you know, flipping houses and how to do, you know, how to build a flipping business, I stumbled upon folks that were building businesses around multifamily real estate, rental real estate. And, you know, that business model was just a lot more attractive. You know, you kind of do the work once and get paid in perpetuity. And, you know, there's a million other reasons why multifamily makes sense that I'm sure a lot of your listeners know about. You know, it's tax advantaged, it's scalable, it's, you know, it requires less of your time, it's less of a job. So for me, I quickly realized that I wanted to build a portfolio, replace my income, and then I could do what I want. So that was that was really how I got into it. So instead of looking for single family, you know, flip deals, I started looking at smaller multifamily deals and started to try and figure out how I could actually raise money for that first deal. You know, I was 19, 20 years old. I had very little money in the bank. No, you know, not bad credit, but no credit history, which is just as bad in a lot of ways. And was fortunate enough to be connected with a private money lender. And that's how I, you know, kind of kickstarted that business. And from there, just snowballed, you know, really doubling the amount of deals I did every year while selling some off. And that's kind of how I built the portfolio, I guess.
Right. Yeah. That was going to be my question. Like, how, you're in college, you don't have any assets, you don't have any credit. You found, I mean, was, did you just find a hard money or private money guy that, or woman, I guess, for that matter, doesn't matter, but a private money individual that just said, hey, sure, I'll loan X number of dollars to a newbie. No problem. I bet you're a good guy. Like, how did you get the street credibility with a lender to get a deal done like that?
Yeah. And that's obviously like, that's like the big question, right? And for me, so I had a college internship at the time that I'd been at for 12 months. And it was, I was working as a more or less an administrative assistant for an angel investing group in Manchester, New Hampshire, which was a really cool internship. It was, you know, awesome experience. But basically what I did was, you know, helped coordinate the meetings every month, helped, you know, take notes during the meetings, a lot of, you know, administrative stuff. But what I did get to do was sit in on the meetings with 10, 15 guys who had a bunch of money who were investing in startup companies. And one of the guys also did private money lending. And I just got to know him over the course of, I mean, literally like 18 months. It was like a year and a half. So three semesters I worked there, just from the middle of my sophomore year in college to the end of my junior year. So I was interested in real estate. This is when I was learning about it. And I knew that I needed to find someone like him to partner with to do a deal, because I didn't have enough money to put down, you know, to put the 20% down with if I went to find a lender, and they wouldn't lend to me anyway. So that wasn't even an option. So
right.
I basically said to him, you know, just 5-10 minutes, a couple times a month, you know, I was like, oh, this is what I'm doing. You know, I'm looking to find these times of deals. And you know, what kind of deals do you lend on? What kind of terms do you typically look for? What kind of investors do you like to work with? What kind of projects do you like to lend on? Do you like lending on rehab projects? You know, are you looking for stuff that's more turnkey? So I just got to know him and what he did. And, you know, whether it was this networking or this angel group, this internship I had, or a networking group, you know, I was doing this with a number of different lenders and just trying to build a relationship over a long period of time, so that when I did actually get out and find a deal, you know, I could bring it to him and we had a warm kind of working relationship, more or less, you know, pretty much everything except for doing a deal. So basically one day I asked him, I said, hey, if I can find a deal that looks like this, and I described that I was looking for, which was, you know, a 2-4 unit property with, you know, very little rehab requirements, that was pretty turnkey, but that was also discounted, you know, something that was really safe and lendable for a private money lender. I said, would you be interested in lending on this? And he said, yeah, I'd give you these terms. I think he was comfortable doing, it was either 80% loan to value. So, you know, he was okay with getting a kind of as is appraisal, regardless of what my purchase price was. So if, you know, I was getting a deal at 80% loan to value in terms of the discount that I was finding it at, he basically fund the entire deal. And for him, that was fine in terms of there's still equity day one. And, right. You know, he wanted an appraisal to make sure of this. You know, I was new, all this stuff. It wasn't like he was just going to write me a check. But for him, finding something that didn't need a lot of rehab, that was currently occupied, I mean, it was a pretty de-risked deal for a private money lender. So that's what I did. I went out and found a 3-unit deal on Craigslist, just a for sale by owner, and stayed in touch with the guy for like 6 months. It was a $200,000 property. And, you know, the as-is market value was $250,000, $260,000 on that one. And I got it for, I think it was like $190,000 at, you know, at the end of the day. So there was a nice spread there, and, you know, he was comfortable loaning me the entire amount. I had to bring money for closing costs, and I needed, you know, to keep money in the bank since I had to fill a unit.
Right.
And that was how we got started. And I ended up doing a number of deals with that guy, and then he, you know, he moved to Florida and retired. So I, you know, I had to quickly find another lender to work with, but he was a great partner on those first few deals. And I think, you know, focusing on building a relationship over a year and a half with no expectations of doing a deal, I think was the only reason that he ended up working with me.
Right. No, that's critical. That's critical. Good for you for getting that first one done and funded, and especially finding somebody, you know, that isn't requiring you to bring large sums of money yourself to the table. I know that's a common requirement, especially with hard money lenders, is that, you know, they're still going to require you to cough up quite a bit of change to make it happen. So good for you for getting that done. So you did those first few, and that was a 2 or a 3 unit, you said?
It was a 3-unit.
Okay, a 3-unit. And what are you guys buying today?
So now we're looking to do, I mean, commercial being 5+ by definition, but in our local market, we're looking for 5 to 100 unit buildings, right? I mean, it's local. We have a property management company that we own. And, you know, if someone brings me a 5-unit deal, even though it might be a little bit smaller than what I'm looking to do, I'm happy to buy it. So locally, we have a pretty wide range, and it just is a function of what this market will give us. I mean, I'd love to only buy 20+ unit buildings and really, you know, carve out a niche there. But the market I invest in is really small. There's just, in terms of inventory, there just isn't a lot of larger multifamily properties. Just like, I can run a data list and there's 100 of them in the whole state. So it's like, you know, that's, if you only focus on that, you do no deals. So
right.
Locally, I have a pretty wide range. And now we're looking in some southeastern markets. at anything that's 30 to 100 units, you know, on the smaller end, you know, me and a partner can take that down. If we're looking at like, you know, 50 to 75 grand a unit, anything larger than that, you know, maybe 3-4 partners, maybe we do some kind of a syndication, but, you know, I'm not looking to do, you know, could technically expand that search larger, but if I'm doing a deal out of state that is in a market that I, you know, don't have already owned property in, I'd rather, you know, kind of ease my way into it, do a deal that's a little bit smaller comparatively to something that's 100 plus where I'm bringing in 10, 15 investors in a syndication. And there's just, a, you know, significantly more moving parts. So, So today, right now, that's what we're looking at. And, you know, we're looking in a couple of markets in Tennessee, you know, Chattanooga, we really like, as is everybody. We're looking in some markets in Arkansas and then in Northern Florida. So, you know, some Southeastern areas, you know, don't want to look, spread ourselves too thin looking. And so we're looking to grow the portfolio locally in New Hampshire, and as well as trying to find some mid-size to somewhat larger multifamily deals in the Southeast.
Talk to us about developing your property management company. Is that something you had initially set out to do, or did that kind of just become as a byproduct of, you know, the line of work you're already, you know, the stuff you're already buying?
It was never something that I wanted to do. What ended up happening was we had a third party manager up until right around 55, 60 units. So this is something that we've built during quarantine, during COVID. This is like the last 6 months we've brought property management in-house. And there wasn't really much reason to do it outside of the third party management company we were using was that while they were good, you know, they did a good job. They were growing a little bit too quickly for their own good. And they're almost growing themselves out of doing a good job for some of the properties that they had in their portfolio. So they weren't being, you know, they couldn't, you know, great problem for them to have, but they couldn't get maintenance guys hired fast enough. You know, there was a lot of growing pains, you know, vacancies were kind of extending out, you know, past what they should have been. And what we realized was, and you know, what I started to realize was if we can hire someone full-time, if we can support that, given the properties that we have, if we can bring someone on full-time in terms of a property manager and bring someone full-time as a maintenance guy, you know, one, we'll have a lot more control. And we were starting to feel like we were losing that with a third party company, especially in the market that we were in, which is, you know, Manchester, New Hampshire is a, you know, population of 120,000. It's not a big market. It's mainly smaller, older buildings. And there isn't like one management company where you can just, you know, kind of go to. So we were, you know, if we were going to bring on another third party management company, we weren't really comfortable with the ones we were interviewing.
Right.
So we were like, you know, let's just do it ourselves. And, you know, we knew enough about it to hire someone and we found a great, you know, partner. And the way we set it up was me and one business partner, we fronted the money. We gave our partner some equity. So there was some upside and, you know, my properties were kind of the seed business for that venture. And, you know, that was about 50 units that I own and then another 20 or so with a partner of mine. And, you know, said, hey, you know, we'll pay you market property management rate. We're an owner in this property management business. Feel free to go out and find third party contracts if you want to, you know, realize some of the upside on your equity and kind of grow that business. So for us, it was like, you know, it's a pretty low risk way to start a property management company. We still remain completely hands off, which is critical for me because I hate property management. And if he goes out and grows it, great. You know, you know, there's a little bit more revenue there that start to, you know, build some revenue in another, from another source and capture another end of the real estate cycle, I guess, in terms of value creation. So that's why we did that. And it's been nice. I'm not really that much more involved than I was. And I'm still happy with the management that we have. So it's not for everyone though, I guess. it's another business to run in a way.
Yeah. Oh, it definitely is another business to run. And as opposed to being able to call somebody else and say, hey, you know, why isn't this getting done? You really have to look inside of your own processes and procedures and say, okay, you know, we're the ones dropping the ball. So that's interesting. I guess, are you more satisfied now that you've done this with the way that your properties are being managed and maintenance is getting taken care of than you were before?
So specifically right now where my own properties like are, you know, I'm by far the biggest client of this management company.
Sure.
Right. So when I call, right, it's our partner's really only working on my buildings right now. And over time, it'll, you know, grow to where he's going to be bringing on other, you know, clients and I'll still probably be one of the bigger ones, but over time that'll change. But as of right now, it has been good in that there's no shift in focus, right? I mean, the management company I had previously, you know, they were managing around 500 units, which is really sizable for the market that we invest in. And they went from 250 units under management to 500 in a couple of years, which is extremely fast. And they had been in business for 10 and it just, real estate market's really hot. You know, the market that we invest in has become extremely popular with out of state investors because the fundamentals are all great for the Northeast. And they just grew out of their shoes. And it was just, you know, they had more vacancies than they had maintenance guys to go and work on. And it, you know, and my calls were getting answered, but it didn't really matter. And now it's like all of the focus of our guys' time here is just getting our stuff done, which is great. So it has, the results have been a little bit better, you know, but we do leave some money on the table in terms of, you know, we're not getting the same labor prices, for example, that management company with 500 units gets. And we're not getting, you know, we're not getting bulk material pricing when we go directly to the vendors. We're not, you know, we're paying a little bit more for our eviction attorney, right? Because we're not doing the same volume that, you know, so we are leaving some money on the table by not taking advantage of a management company with a bigger portfolio. But over time, as we grow and we develop those things, I think it'll be a bit more evened out. But obviously, then it's a net positive in that we're getting vacancies filled faster. We're being a little bit more hands-on with our management, which is, you know, really the critical part.
Right. And those are things, I mean, gosh, growth and the slow growth like that is the way, you know, that things eventually get done. So yeah, maybe out of the gate, it's, you know, like you said, you're leaving some money on the table, but you're setting yourself up for success down the road. So that's fantastic. Axel, let's jump into the final four here. If you were to take everything that you've learned here in this, I guess, pretty fast 5 years. I guess it's been 5 years, right?
5 years, yep.
Five. That's awesome, by the way. You're going gangbusters in 5 years, so that's great. Take everything you learned in the last 5 years and distill it down to one piece of advice. What would that one piece of advice be?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think especially with real estate, it's consistency in terms of everything that you're doing across the board. You know, in terms of, for me, the only reason I did that first deal was I was consistent in my communication with this one lender. And the only reason I found that first deal is because I was consistently on Craigslist and, you know, emailing for rent ads. And I was consistently reaching out to owners and really hustling to do that. And I think it's, and now, right, the I have to reframe that consistency while it's, you know, still doing a lot of the things I did initially to grow the business. Now it's, I need to consistently, you know, speak with brokers every week who are doing deals in out-of-state markets that I'm trying to learn. I have to consistently underwrite deals to learn those markets. And all of that comes with just building the volume of the tasks that you're doing and trying to, you know, really just tell yourself you're going to make two offers a week for the next 6 months. And that's how you're going to get a deal. Like, that's really how you have to look at it. So I think for me, it's, you know, you don't make really, like, there's no just stuff that doesn't fall into your lap if you're not out there doing stuff every single day. And I think that's, you know, what I've realized over the last number of years being in the business is you just got to stay consistent with everything that you're doing in order to, you know, achieve the results you want.
Right. No, that's great. That's a great point. What's one thing you're currently doing to stay on top of your game?
Big 2021 resolution for me is reading more. I historically have not been a great reader, but especially now that we're growing in terms of people, I've been reading a lot in terms of leadership and management and stuff like that, and starting to get away from learning just specifically real estate related topics and starting to spend more time as a business owner. You know, we got the real estate stuff, you know, pretty much figured out in terms of how to identify a deal and fund it and all that good stuff. And now we got to figure out how to grow a business with people that are that we're paying. So for me, that's something I'm currently doing, like today, right now, is reading a lot of management, business related books, stuff that's outside of real estate.
Man, that's awesome. When it comes to giving back, what's one thing you're currently doing to make the world a better place?
So something that we do in Manchester that we're pretty proud of, actually, and we'd like to grow it more, is we have a charitable organization that actually helps clean streets up in the markets that we're investing in. Obviously, there's incentive there to make the neighborhoods nicer for everyone that owns property, but the city of Manchester, New Hampshire, there's historically been a lot of rougher areas, as every city has. But in terms of within the state of New Hampshire, it hasn't really gotten the love in terms of a lot of the areas that we invest in real estate and we try and improve by improving the properties.
Right.
But there's a step beyond that that you can take in terms of actually getting into the public infrastructure and helping to build that. So that's something that we do right now that we think there's value across the board for whether you're a real estate investor, you're just someone that lives in the city that, you know, you're getting benefit from.
Right. No, that's really cool. That's really cool. Axel, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Sure. So Instagram, I'm really active on Instagram at Multifamily Wealth. I post what I think to be some helpful content on there. I'm sure other people would would be the judge of that, but that's a great place. You know, LinkedIn, if you just look up my name, Axel Ragnarsson, there's not too many floating around on there. And then I host a podcast myself. It's called the Multifamily Wealth Podcast. And we talk about multifamily and scaling businesses around investing in multifamily real estate. So those are probably the best three ways. And like I said, I like to be pretty quick in my replies. So I think those are the big ones in terms of reaching me as quickly as you can.
Axel, hey, thanks so much for your time today. Certainly appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks for the invite, Sam. This has been great.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Podcast. If you can do me a favor, And subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.